6. That evening, Lars Powderdry met his mistress Maren Fain at the Paris branch of Mr. Lars Incorporated, where Maren maintained an office as elaborate as... He searched for the metaphor, but Maren's aesthetic tastes eluded description. Hands in his pockets, he gazed around him as Maren disappeared into the powder room to make ready for the real world. For her, existence began when the workday ended, and this despite the fact of her high managerial position. Logically, she should have been career-oriented, as involved in her vocation as the darkest, most sullen Calvinist. But it had not worked out that way. Maren was 29, slightly tall, she stood 5'7", barefoot, with luminous red hair. No, not red, it was mahogany in tone, polished. Not like the artificial photograph-grained plastic, but the real thing. Yes, Maren's coloration had been proved authentic. She woke up illuminated, eyes bright as... hell, he thought. What did it matter? Who cared at 7:30 in the morning? A beautiful, alert, slightly too tall woman, colorful and graceful and muscular at that time of day, was an offense to reason and an abomination to sexuality. In that, what did one do with her? At least, after the first few weeks, one could hardly go on and on. As Maren re-entered the office, coat over her shoulders, he said, "You really don't care what goes on here." "You mean the Enterprise? The Incorporated?" Her cat eyes flew wide, merrily. She was way ahead of him. "Look, you have my soma at night, and my mind all day long. What else do you want?" Lars said, "I hate education. I'm not kidding. Soma? Where'd you learn that?" He felt hungry, irritable, at loose ends. Due to the buggery of contemporary time zone computation, he had in actuality been on his feet 16 hours. "You hate me," Maren said, in the tone of a marriage counselor. "I know your real motivations," the tone implied, and it also implied, "and you don't." Maren gazed at him squarely, unafraid of anything he might do or say. He reflected that although technically he could fire her by day or kick her out of his Paris Conapt by night, he had really no hold over her. Whether her career meant anything to her or not, she could get a good job anywhere, any time. She did not need him. If they parted company, she would miss him for a week or so, grieve to the extent of bawling unexpectedly after the third martini, but that would be it. On the other hand, if he were to lose her, the wound would never close. "Want dinner?" he said unenthusiastically. Maren said,
"No, want a prayer."
He stared at her. "What?" Calmly, she said,
"I want to go to church and light a candle and pray. What's so strange about that? I do it a couple of times a week, you know that. You knew it when you first..."
Delicately, she finished,
"Knew me in the biblical sense. I told you that first night."
"Candle? For what?" Lighting a candle had to be for something. Maren said,
"My secret."
Feeling baffled, he said, "I'm going to bed. It may be 6 o'clock to you, but it's past 2 a.m. for me. Let's go to your Conapt, and you can fix me something light to eat, and then I'll get some sleep, and you can go pray." He started toward the door.
"I heard," Maren said, "that a Soviet official managed to get to you today."
That startled him.
"Where'd you hear that?" "I got a warning from the board, an official reprimand to the firm telling us to beware of short old men."
"I doubt it," Maren shrugged.
"The Paris office ought to be informed, don't you agree? It did happen in a public place."
"I didn't seek the idiot out. He approached me. I was just having a cup of coffee." But he felt uneasy. Had the board really transmitted an official reprimand? If so, it ought to have come to his attention.
"That's general," Marin said. Whose name I always forget, the fat one you're so afraid of, Neitz?
She smiled. The spear in his side twisted.
General Neitz contacted us here in Paris via the ultra-closed-circuit vid line, and he said to be more careful. I said, talk to you. He said, you're making this up.
But he could see she wasn't. Probably it had happened within the hour of his meeting with Axel Kaminsky. Marin had had all day to relay General Nitz's warning to him. It was like her to wait until now, when his blood sugar was low and he had no defense.
I better call him, he said, half to himself. He's in bed. Consult the time zone chart for Portland, Oregon. Anyhow, I explained it all to him.
She walked out into the hall, and he followed, reflexively. Together they waited for the elevator, which would carry them to the roof field where his hopper, property of the firm, was parked. Marin hummed happily to herself, maddening him.
You explained it. How? I said you had been considering for a long time that, in case you weren't liked, appreciated here, you intended to coat.
Levelly, he said.
And what was his answer? General Neitz said yes, he realized that you could always coat. He appreciated your position. In fact, the military and the board, at their special closed session at Festung, Washington, D.C. last Wednesday, had discussed this. And General Neitz's staff reported that they had three more weapons fashion designers standing by. Three new mediums, which that psychiatrist at the Wallingford Clinic at St. George, Utah, had turned up.
Is this on the level?
Sort of.
He made a quick computation. It's not 2 a.m. in Oregon. It's noon, high noon. Turning, he started back toward her office.
You're forgetting, Marin said, that we're now on Tolliver Econ time.
But in Oregon, the sun's in the middle of the sky. Patiently, Marin said,
but still, by T.E.T., it's 2 a.m. Don't call General Neitz. Give up. If he had wanted to talk to you, he would have called the New York office, not here. He doesn't like you. That's what it is, midnight or midday.
She smiled pleasantly. Lars said,
you're sowing seeds of discontent.
Truth-telling, she disagreed.
W-T-K-W-Y-T-I?
No, he said. I don't want to know what my trouble is.
Your trouble? Lay off.
Marin continued.
Your trouble is that you feel uneasy when you have to deal with myths, or as you would put it, lies. So all day long you go around uneasy. But then when someone starts talking the truth, you break out in a rash. You get psychosomatically ill from head to toe.
The answer, Marin said, at least from the standpoint of those who have to deal with you, temperamental and mercurial as you are, is to tell you the myth.
Oh, shut up. Did Neitz give any details about these new mediums they'd uncovered?
Sure, one small boy, fat as Tweedledee, sucking a lollipop, very disagreeable. One middle-aged spinster lady in Nebraska, one...
Myths, Lars said.
Told so they seem true. He strode back up the corridor to Marin's office. A moment later, he was unlocking her vidset, dialing Festung, Washington, D.C., and the board's mundane stations. But as the picture formed, he heard a sharp click. The picture, minutely but perceptibly, if you looked closely enough, shrank. And at the same time, a red warning light lit up. The vidset was tapped somewhere along its transmitting cable, and not by a mere coil, but by a splice-in. At once he rang off, got to his feet, rejoined Marin, who had let one elevator go by and was serenely waiting for him.
Your set's tapped.
I know, Marin said.
And you haven't called PT&T to come in and remove the tap?
Marin said graciously, as if talking to someone with severe intellectual limitations,
Look, they know anyhow. A vague enough reference, they, either Koch, the disinterested agency, hired by Peep East or extensions of Peep East itself, such as its KVB. As she as much as said, it didn't matter. They knew it all anyhow. Still, it annoyed him, trying to reach his client through a conduit tapped in such a way that no effort, not even the formality, had been made to conceal the introduction of a hostile, self-serving, highly unnatural bit of electronic mechanism. Marin said thoughtfully,
"It was put on last week sometime."
Lars said, "I do not object to a monopoly of knowledge by one small class. It doesn't upset me that there are a few cogs and a lot of persaps. Every society is really run by an elite."
"So what's the trouble, darling dear?"
"What bothers me," Lars said as the up elevator came and he and Marin entered it, "is that the elite, in this case, doesn't even bother to guard that knowledge which makes it the elite." There is, he thought, probably a free pamphlet distributed by UN-West for the asking called something like, "How We Rule You Fellas and What Are You Going to Do About It?"
"You're in authority," Marin reminded him.
Glancing at her, he said,
"You do keep that telepathic brain ad turned on, despite Baron's ordinance."
Marin said,
"It cost me 50 mil to get it installed. You think I'm going to set it to the off position, really? Look how it earns its keep. It tells me if you're faithful or off in some connept with..."
"Read my subconscious, then."
"I have been. Anyhow, why? Who wants to know where you keep the nasty things you don't want to know?"
"Read it anyhow. Read the prognosticating aspects, what I'm going to do, the potential actions still in germinal form."
Marin shook her head.
"Such big words and such little ideas."
She giggled at his response. The ship, now on auto-auto, had reached a height above the commute layer, was on its way out of town. He had reflexively instructed it to vacate Paris. God knew why.
"I'll analyze you, dear duck," she said. "It's really touching what you're thinking over and over again deep down there in that substandard mind of yours. Substandard if you don't count that knob on the frontal lobe that makes you a medium."
He waited to hear only the truth. Marin said,
"Over and over again, that little inner voice is squeaking, why must the percepts believe what isn't so? Why can't they be told, and being told, accept?"
Her tone was compassionate now. For her, quite unusually so.
"You just can't grasp the incredible truth. They can't."